Welcome to the stream. I'm Ahmed Shahabuddin. In recent months, India has risen to become the world's fifth largest economy. But at the same time, the divide between the country's richest and poorest appears to be deepening, as highlighted by the anti-poverty NGO Oxfam. Today, we ask, why are India's poor being left behind? Joining us today from Bengaluru, Akshay Tarfe is a media specialist at Oxfam India, which recently published a report exploring the impact of wealth inequality in the country. We also have in Bengaluru Jyotsna Jha, the director at the Center for Budget and Policy Studies. Her work has explored gender, health, and education equity. And last but not least, in New Delhi, Ajit Jha is an assistant professor at the Institute for Studies in Industrial Development. Now, you too can join the conversation. Send us your questions and comments through our live YouTube chat. So, very many things we want to get to, but let's start with the numbers, some of these numbers in Oxfam that I want to share with you. Take a look at this. The richest 1% owning about 40.6% of the country's wealth, the poorest 50%, just less than 3% of the wealth. Now, we have billionaires in the meantime, rising from 102 of them in 2020 to 166 in 2022. And the combined wealth of 100 richest people, that's the top richest, is $660 billion. Now, with all those figures in mind, Jyotsna, what's behind the rise of this sort of deepening divide, and how serious a problem is it?
Well, hi. I think it's a very, very serious problem. And I also think, it's not just a chance. It's also the policies, the approach, the supply side growth approach that has been followed in last 10 years is largely responsible for this. And we see that, you know, budget after budget, we actually see there's no movement away from that. If you take this year's budget, we were expecting last year's budget, there was a huge expectation that there will be some kind of a windfall tax, which will equate, you know, which will be like a wealth tax. That did not happen. And this year, despite the fact that there are two, three measures, then there was also a countermeasure. So you had, for example, this capital gains tax that has been limited to 100 million. But then your income tax slab has also, the surcharge has also come down. So whatever gains you have from the one, that gets offset from the other. Well, and I don't think inequality is an issue for everybody. That's the biggest reason why you don't see any measures.
And I want to drill down on that point a little bit later about who this is an issue for, who is actually most impacted. But because you brought that up, let's listen to the Prime Minister himself talking about this when the latest budget was announced in February. Take a look.
The first budget of this nectar era will build a strong foundation for building a developed India. This budget provides stability to those in need, and it will fulfill the dreams of today's aspirational society, including villagers, poor people, middle-class people, and farmers.
So, Akshay, hearing that, I mean, India's government saying its final budget before the general election in 2024 will spur economic growth. Critics are saying it'll do the opposite. What do you think?
The Prime Minister is right that India is growing, but we need to ask the question that who it is growing for and where the growth is going. You know, this is the story of Indian inequality is a story of a failed promise by Government of India every year. This is a story of failed trickle-down economics, which they still believe in, and the budget is also a reflection of that. We are seeing that they are claiming that they have increased the health budget and education budget, which is true. There has been significant increase, but it's not enough. The government had promised that for health they will spend 2.5% of the GDP. And for education, they will spend 6% of the GDP. And it is their own national policy which talks about that. But what we are saying is that, you know, the union government, which is the national government of India, is still spending, I think, less than half on education and health both. So we need to see that budget might work, but for whom?
Well, that's an important question. Who does it work for, Ajit? I want to share with you a video that we have. This is from a union. This is from a clip from my colleague Al Jazeera's Pavni Mittal from December. But this is a union of farmers, and it's a protest, basically, and they're very close to the BJP. So they're certainly affected by this. Take a look, Ajit.
An impromptu dance has broken out at this rally in New Delhi. The song comes from the western state of Rajasthan, one of the many regions represented here. Thousands of farmers from across India have gathered to demand the government lower taxes on fertilizers and other agriculture equipment and increase financial support.
We want prices that earn us a profit. Right now, we are not recovering our costs. We are buried deep in debt. For three generations, we have only been passing on debts.
Ajit, what is the government doing in order to quell some of these concerns?
I think the first important thing is that lots of echo is coming in my when I listening. So I think can you just correct so I can properly hear everyone.
Sir, I'm curious. Yeah, we can hear you. What is the BJP government doing in the interests of the people of India in this dire sort of situation where there's so much income inequality?
See, the thing is that the previous speaker has already talked about this rising inequality in India. The government, the focus of the government is basically on creation of jobs and sustaining growth. The two things are important right now to create more jobs and growth. And the focus is on that.
So just give me a sec. I understand what you're saying. Joshna, what do you make of the BJP's argument in all of this? I mean, the budget really does put a lot of its faith in private investment. Is that going to impact the middle class and, more importantly, the poorer class?
Yeah, actually, that's the whole point. See, the private investment, you can have faith in private investment if you see the evidence of it. You look at the last 3 years, it's not the first time that the government has put its faith in the private investment. We have seen that continuously. That has been the philosophy, actually, and that continues in this budget. And we do not see any investment coming up. The private investment is actually not rising at all. And one has to understand why. That tells you that these incentives are not enough in a situation when private investors clearly see that demand is not growing. And therefore, the focus had to be on demand. And I'm afraid we do not see that. So there is a problem in terms of where you are putting your faith in. We have no, when you are looking at demand, demand is just not growing.
Right.
You look at savings, it's all-time low. So unless you actually have measures that will grow demand, that you will not see the change. And let me add here.
Please.
And that it's important that, you know, the demand comes from the large number of people and not small number of people. That's the only way. So you have to have policies that will give money to in the hands of poor who actually spend. That's the way to look at it. And we don't see that.
And Akshay, when
look at poor, at Narega. Yeah. You know, that's something, it's a clear-cut example. When you are actually not responding to unmet demands, you are actually reducing money for something that would have ensured both livelihood security as well as pushing the demand.
Right. And you know, you talk about a large number of people. Well, in India, a large number of people, 80%, in fact, 8 out of 10 Indians support higher taxes on the rich, on corporations, primarily those who benefited during the pandemic. With that in mind, I do want to share with you...
And will you allow me to
please
add one more sentence?
Sure.
Which is this, that we have, you know, we have, if you look at the worldwide situation, we have not done very badly when it comes to growth, you know, the pandemic and everything, but it has been a jobless growth. So I think employment is a huge concern, especially among the youth. Overall unemployment rate is much lower as compared to the youth unemployment rate.
Right, right.
And I think that's where we had to focus on.
Well, no, and I appreciate you bringing that up. I mean, when I talk, Akshay, about that 80% that want a tax, the rich and bigger corporations. You know, we have a social justice activist who's kind of making a criticism that you were mentioning, saying the government not spending enough specifically on programs like healthcare and education, which are so critical. So take a listen to what he shared with us.
There's an increasing wealth gap in India, mainly due to unequal access to resources and power. That stems from systematic discrimination based on caste, religion, and gender. Multiple studies have confirmed the same, and affirmative action should be the norm. The super rich have it easy here. There is no wealth tax, and that should be taken care of immediately. And the government expenditure on health and education should be improved. And the distribution of political and fiscal power should be more towards the states, because every state has a different issue to address.
So, Ajit, I want to ask you, the finance minister on February 1st introduced the budget, $550 billion budget. Critics saying it doesn't include, as we just heard from one activist there, it doesn't include the reintroduction of this wealth tax. Why not?
See, the first thing is that the wealth tax is not a new concept in India. It was already in India till 2015. And after 2015, government has repealed the wealth tax and it has introduced the surcharge. But the thing is that what is the objective of introducing the wealth tax? If you introduce the wealth tax, whether you are going to collect that revenue, because the data shows that when there was a wealth tax in India, the collection was revenue was not that much. The second issue is that there was a committee was formed in 1995 under the chairmanship of Rajaji Chelia, and it found that we have to repeal this tax, because the focus would be on, when you are introducing a wealth tax, the focus would be on unproductive wealth. The wealth is productive, can be invested again.
If I can stop you there, because Jyotsna looks like she might have a response to some of what you're saying. I'm wondering, Jyotsna, if 8 out of 10 Indians want to see this wealth tax on the rich and on corporations, is it not possible that it could have the potential to, in fact, dramatically increase lives? Or is what Ajit was saying there correct?
See, that's the argument that one often hears, and that has some merit, that, you know, wealth should be left to wealthy people because they know how to invest. I would have bought that. You know, in 95, that might have been true when Raja Chelaya found that. But if you look at evidence, you know, as analysts, you know, as non-partisan analysts, our job is to look at evidence. And when we look at evidence in current, you know, past, in immediate past, contemporary years, we do not find that. See, look at corporate tax was lowered with the same argument. So, that it will, you know, it will generate more resources, that will be invested. Yeah. That was what
I would
we
like
would
to
see. Private
also
go ahead, Akshay, jump in there. Yeah. Explain. Yeah. You were shaking your head a lot as we were hearing Jyotsna there. Why were you shaking your head so much?
I would like to disagree that.
Let's listen to Akshay first. Ajit will come to you. Akshay, go ahead. Ajit, let's listen to Akshay.
The criticism of wealth tax in India right now has to go beyond its feasibility and implementation, because we are seeing a lot of other countries which are actually implementing and bringing back wealth tax. We have Spain, we have Bolivia, and there are a couple of other countries also who are trying to bring wealth tax back. And I think if government considers it seriously, we can really implement it more cleverly and more feasibly. And I understand the tax avoidance is an issue, but I'm sure government has resources and tactics to address that. I just wanted to add one more point.
Sure.
This discussion shouldn't be just about the budget here. It is a continuous trend in the Indian economy. From 2012, if you see the numbers, the wealth which has been created, almost 40% of the new wealth created has been grabbed by the rich. And only 3% of that has gone to the bottom
50%
of the population.
Right. And we've
that means you don't have redistribution measures in place.
Right. And you know, just to visualize that more, we have a short social video by Al Jazeera that highlights the controversy over one billionaire in particular, Gautam Adani. Take a look at this. course, Mr. Adani and Mr. Modi, very close there. I do want to just ask you straight up, is this a case, does this help strengthen the case that billionaires should be taxed? Your thoughts, Akshay?
Yeah, definitely billionaires should be more taxed. I mean, you know, that is the most common sense measure right now to combat inequality. We are not saying that wealth tax is a silver bullet solution to all the problems, mm-hmm. but it can be a huge step in combating, you know, currently existing mass suffering and health crisis and climate crisis and education crisis in India.
And Ajit, what do you think? I mean, should billionaires be taxed more? And more importantly, what do you think is...
I think the question is that whether rich are paying tax or not. So the answer is that rich are paying tax. The second question is that whether we should increase the tax, we should increase the wealth tax further. So the question that the previous panelists were saying that there are countries which has introduced wealth tax. So there are only 4 countries in the world that has introduced wealth tax. So it was 15 countries in 1995. Now only 4 countries are introducing wealth tax. So we have to see the logic of introducing the tax, wealth tax or any tax.
Jyotsna?
The question is that right now, that how government is efficiently collecting the tax, how to increase the tax revenue base. I'm not opposed to the collection of
but,
tax.
But I guess the question that I'm wondering, if I can just focus us in a bit, then why do you think there is this growing divide? Why, you know, who is actually missing out on this story of economic growth and success that the BJP is painting? Ajit? Ajit, can you hear me? Okay, it seems like maybe Ajit cannot hear me. Let's Jyotsna, who is missing out? Can you answer for us?
Yeah, of course, you know, the poorest.
Ajit, forgive me. I think you might have a delay. Can you hear me?
2020.
Ajit, can you hear me? Okay, I think we're having issues, forgive me, with his audio. We're gonna just continue with you, Jyotsna, as you were saying.
Yeah, so if, you know, one is that, and if you look at the last 10 years trend, the corporate tax collections have been actually falling down. So I'm not sure, you know, if rich are actually paying the taxes because, and it could be because of the fall in the rate. So I'm not saying that, you know, they are avoiding the tax, but the tax rate, when we cut down, that has, you know, the logic was that that will actually increase
right.
the collection. That has not happened. Income tax collections have been going up. And corporate tax collections have been going down, if you look at the gradient. And that tells you that
Please go on, Jyotsna.
And I want to give... Yeah. Okay, sorry.
And there you also see that, you know, for example, I think it's a good measure in this year's budget when we are putting a cap on the capital gains tax because it's a transactional tax and that alone is not enough. We have gift tax. So we have kinds of wealth tax here and there. But if you look at the exemptions, you know, it's almost everybody is exempted. So if, you know, I can receive anybody, you know, whoever you are married, your husband's uncle, aunt, nephews, nieces, anybody can pass things to you and everything is exempted.
The
logic.
Yeah. Go ahead.
The logic of wealth tax is that this is one of the most, you know, wealth is something that has nothing to do with who you are. It's largely comes from the fact that where you are born.
Yeah.
So it's the social capital that determines it. So, and therefore, in a context, when rich are, you know, we used to read as a student of economics that rich becoming rich and poor becoming poorer. But now we have a glaring case of that. And therefore, I think, you know, when you have some measure, but the moment you reduce the surcharge, you basically offset that. So we have to have a very clear policy where I will say demand-led growth.
So
employment should be incentivized and not production. And you have to have taxes and then you have to direct those taxes.
Let's take a moment. I do want to kind of go ahead, Akshay. I know you want to get in there. But before we come to you, I want to just share with our audience, you know, we want to talk about the economic challenges on a day-to-day basis that affect the majority of Indians. We do have a little clip from Al Jazeera's Pavni Mittal. This is about day laborers who come to New Delhi from the villages looking for work. Take a listen.
Scenes like this are an everyday routine on the outskirts of New Delhi. Dozens of laborers come to the street every morning to find work. They fix their wages with recruiters and head to the work site. Most of them are hired in construction. Aditya Pratap says he holds a master's degree but was forced to leave his village because his job doesn't pay enough.
It's very competitive. There aren't enough jobs. There are few government jobs and private companies don't pay well. It's also difficult for us to get paid on time. The government should fix a minimum wage for daily wage workers like us.
Akshay, I want to ask you, in YouTube, we have Solid Cancer asking which regions are most affected by the economic inequality. Is it related to religion or to caste? What were you going to add and what do you make of what the daily laborers were saying there?
Yeah, so I just wanted to answer also the further question of who exactly is losing or who is exactly is getting most affected by this wealth inequality. And the answer is very straightforward. It's countries, Dalits, Adivasis, Muslims and marginalized women. It's also the informal sector workers, which you are showing in right now on the screen, which form majority of India's workforce. And a government estimates itself say that they might be earning like less than $10,000 or like $100 per month. So these are the people who lose and they are dependent on government services. And when you cut the government budget, when you cut food security budgets, on which almost 800 million people are dependent on, it is almost twice the population of United States.
So Akshay, I'm curious, what does a more economically fair India actually look like to you?
I think, as I said, that the wealth tax government must consider. And once you have that revenue from the wealth tax, we need to universalize our public services. That means better healthcare, better education, and better social security schemes. What I mean by that is we need more primary healthcare centers. We need more doctors. We need more schools because a lot of children are right now out of school. And that would be a step towards more fairer and equal India.
And just briefly, Jyotsna, what would you add to that?
You know, what I will add is that when public investment is high on health and education, it also leads to growth. Look at the entire, I keep arguing this all the time. Look at the capitalist Europe. It has thrived on heavy investment on public health and education. So we have to realize that, and it's not only the long term. The people talk about, multiplier effect of the capital investment. I will say that the distributive aspect of multiplier effect of public investment on health and education must be studied better and adopted. That is one. Other thing I think is very important, that technology
is being used.
Mm-hmm. Okay, fine. So I'll say then basically inclusive, and inness cannot be just a rhetoric. You have to actually back it up with policies that are really, that make the economy inclusive.
Well, we have heard from Neera, someone who shared with us the role of philanthropy in all of this, which we haven't discussed as much. Take a listen to what Neera had to say.
During the 2023 budget, India's parliament was celebrating impressive economic growth rates of 7%. But we continue to be a country with deep inequalities. 10% of our richest, who got even richer during the pandemic, own 80% of the wealth. It's clear India needs to redefine its social contract and what we can expect from each other in society, irrespective of wealth. There's a growing responsibility for philanthropy to support our most vulnerable communities. We see the rise of family philanthropy shaping a new social contract where a billion thrive with dignity and equity.
Well, what certainly stood out to me is that statement about India needing to redefine its social contract. So many different ways to do that. I want to thank our guests for sharing some of their insights on solutions as well as highlighting what the problem was. Remember, you can always find us online at stream.aljazeera.com. Thanks for watching.